Dario Franchitti joining Speed Freaks. And Dario, I asked you when you walked in, looking up at this television set, what do you not miss about this race? And you said, not a thing. Yeah. Meaning what?
I'd get in this race, I would get in a minute. It was funny, I was sitting in the driver's meeting this morning. I had to give him some words of wisdom about being patient and all that crap. And I said to them, I'm not the guy to tell you, because the first time I did this race, I got a jump start penalty, which I did in a 24-hour race. I was like, God. But I started thinking, I was like, listen to Bo Barfield, I'm going, yeah, okay, that bit. And then I suddenly thought, what are you doing? You're not driving. But I went into automatic pilot. And I loved coming here because it was not as much pressure as an IndyCar race. And, you know, I would drive with Dixon quite a lot and Jamie Mack and Kyle Larson, and we got into quite a good rhythm and had a good time. But the IndyCar stuff, though, I literally sit on the time and stand watching those guys going,
When did that attitude towards IndyCar come about for you?
What date was that? September, whatever it was, or October the 10th. My brain just shifted. And it's so much easier to sit on that timing stand and say, well, you've got to do this and you should do that. And why are you doing this? You know, rather than actually having to do it, just telling people what they're doing wrong. It's actually quite fun in the case of Tony Kanaan. I love telling him what he's doing wrong. It's the commitment level to drive an IndyCar fast, road course or especially oval, is intense, and I just don't have that anymore.
I can imagine the intensity at a place like Texas. For the spectator, it looks like a video game. You guys are just going infinitely fast.
Oh, Texas Motor Speedway?
Is it the same thing for the behind the driver's seat? Does that appear faster than anywhere else?
No, I think the one that feels the fastest is Iowa. 17 or 18 second laps. That's nuts. It's absolutely mad. And as the track ages as well, the cars are sliding about a bit more in the places
see,
like
for
that.
For us, that would have no... That has no bearing for speed. Texas seems like it's animation. It seems unreal.
I think Texas is going to be fast with this resurfacing job.
Yeah.
Ooh, for IndyCar, yes.
Can you imagine?
Again, we get to sit there and go.
That's going to be intense. Even a cup car. I say even a cup car.
Right.
I mean, they're hauling already around there. That's going to be quick. Old Eddie Gossage is going to be going.
Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, exactly.
But isn't it cool, though, how, I mean, I hate the cliche, everything happens for a reason, but you are able now to be, I mean, you're an awesome dad, you can just kind of chill, and your job has changed with Ganassi, and you're having a lot of fun, Dario.
Life is different. I say that a lot to my wife. I say to Ellie, I said, you're lucky you didn't know when I was driving, because I was a dick. And I mean, you guys have known me a long, long time, and I was intense, and... Mm-hmm. I'm still, when I'm at the track, I'm still intense, and I still want to help the guys any way I can, but it's a different level of intensity. And I'm busy between the Ganassi thing, Formula E, doing stuff with Acura, with the NSX and all that, and Goodwood TV. I'm busy, but it's not as intense, and I can sort of just hang out and play with Sophia and have a good time. And I watched Dixon do that, and it just, I don't know how he does it. He's sitting there and he's hugging his girls before the race, and then he gets in and just puts on this clinic, and he's just thinking, I couldn't do that.
You don't think you could have?
No, I couldn't.
I bet
do,
yes, you could.
No way. I could do one or the other, and I couldn't do both. No way.
Huh. No. That's interesting. You don't think it's just because you're in a different time in your life now?
No, I had to be all in. I mean, I had a notebook next to my bed, and I used to wake up in the middle of the night and start writing down ideas for sort of what went wrong last weekend with the setup and how I screwed up some corner.
Really?
Yeah, it was. I was not the easiest person to live with.
I've talked to a lot of drivers who have all different ideas about how they learn new racetracks. Some of them keep notebooks like you do. Some of them go seat of the pants. Some of them get a video game. How did you learn a track that you'd never been to?
I would walk them. Just do track walks. Like if you came to even when I knew the place, if you came to St. Pete on a Friday or Saturday night, chances are you'd have found me walking around it.
And
like 9:30 at night. And
what can you learn from walking the track when you're going 200 miles an hour when you're on the track?
Because of experience, you understand what a corner looks like, and you can sort of read the bumps. And the street course racing is about reading the surfaces and the bumps as much as the angle of the corner. And most of those corners are blind. Huh. So when you turn in, you've got to know exactly what is on the other side, both in terms of the bumps and the grip level over those different surfaces. And I was always analyzing that.
You ever get fooled?
Oh, God, yeah. All the time.
So when you look at it, you come up to turn one and it looks like this, and at speed, it looks like something completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. I guess a lot of places I got fooled less times maybe than the other guys, but sometimes I properly screwed it up too.
Grand Marshal for your Daytona 24-hour and former IndyCar pilot. I say former. It doesn't sound like the dude's ever going to hop back in an IndyCar. Dario Franchitti joining Speed Freaks. Thanks to our friends at Continental Tires and the Lucas Oil Studios. And I poked my head into the championships lounge or whatever they call the big area over there in the tower. And you're up there on stage. Who was that you were with on stage?
Murray Smith.
Murray Smith. Yeah. Another Scott?
Yeah, Murray is from Scotland, and he looks after basically Rolex and racing. Okay. And has done for a long, long time.
But there was a story that you gave, and remember, this is radio, a story you gave about Chip Ganassi and how he would tell all of his drivers if you wrecked the car. Go through that story again about whose fault it is and so forth.
See the fear in my eyes there. A Chip story. Chip gets that fear in his eye when I'm going to tell a Chip story. He's like,
wait, we didn't talk about this.
Exactly, not that one. He would sit there, and we'd have these sort of team meetings on Friday afternoon for this race. And we knew what was coming, but the new guys would be sitting there and go, okay, here's the deal. If you hit another car, that's your fault. If another car hits you, that is your fault.
That's your fault.
If you drive off the track, that is your fault. If somebody else pushes you off the track, that is also your fault. In fact, the only way it's not going to be your fault is if a meteor comes out of the sky and smashes into your car. Then at that point, it might not be your fault.
It might not be.
And if it's your fault, I'll be having a word with you. Thanks for the pep talk, Chip.
I want to see new drivers when he says that.
Oh, Chip is king of the pep talks, honestly.
Is he really?
Oh, man.
You've driven for some owners, man.
Yes, I have.
Is he the king of the...
His pep talks are funny.
Does he fire you up or just kind of make you go, what the hell did he just say?
One time in Indy, when we had that first year of the multiple qualifying attempts.
Oh, yeah?
Remember that?
Okay.
And I was on qualifying attempt 6, and I was ready to hang myself from the pagoda. Honestly, my sense of humor was gone. My nerves were done. And I just didn't want any more part of it. I was so out, just worn out, mentally worn out. And he comes up to the car, and I'm sitting in there, and he's like, and I was always a quiet person. I was like, yeah, yeah, you know, none of that crap. I was like sitting there, and I would be very focused on what I had to do. And he's like, are you ready? You ready, man?
Yeah, yeah.
No, are you ready? Yeah. And he starts like smacking the side of the helmet. I'm like, and, but he did. He got me fired. He got me so angry because he was annoying me that he got me fired up, and I managed to get through the qualifying.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
But so his annoyance worked.
Oh, that time, yeah. But his. I'm trying to think of some of the Ganassi pep talks I have had. Like, they're legendary though. They're so to the point. He's
just basically don't.
Oh, I have heard him say that to me too. He is just funny. Like, in all senses of the word, he's mega. And, you know, they're all different. Team owners,
yeah,
like drivers,
without question.
All, you know them all. They're all different. And Chip can be a total hard ass, and he can be just the nicest person. And, you know, in a personal setting away from a racetrack, he's done a lot of stuff for me in my life that, you know, was above and beyond, and he's, yeah.
That's really cool. That's cool to hear, because sometimes Ganassi can get a bad rap, but you know what? From what we've seen and we laughed with him and had fun with him in interviews, he seems like he can be a real big teddy bear.
Oh, he can, but he can also, trust me, he can lay down the law like few I've ever seen.
But that's what gets the best out of people, his employees or whoever.
Some people.
Oh, yeah. He knows when, in my opinion, he knows when to do it, when to just... He put his arm around you and went to just absolutely ream you. In fact, the only falling out we've ever had, we were coming back from Laguna. We did Dixon and I did a Grand Am race, I think it was at the time, to help out the team. And he's like, hey, can you do this? Yeah, yeah. So we're coming back and Chip flew us home. And I brought my backpack on the plane and he just had a meltdown.
What?
And I was like, what? All the stuff, all the cars I've wrecked to yours, all the shit that I've done, and you're gonna have a And then we sat the whole way from Laguna to Pittsburgh facing each other and didn't speak a word.
From Laguna Seca to Pittsburgh.
It was a long flight.
Because of a backpack.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's Chip.
And, right.
God. But he, his way of doing it is like, what do you need as a driver? What do you need? And if you tell him what you need and he'll go get you it, then he expects results. But
so his success as a team owner, his success as a businessman, has any of that rubbed off on you and you've been able to take that into your post-race career?
I've definitely learned from him. You know, as I continue to work with the organization, I rely on him and Mike Hull a lot.
Yeah,
you know, I work with Mike. Part of my job now is working with Mike to sort of help what's going on and you know, put my 10 cents in. Mike ultimately makes all the decisions, work with Scott Harner, Barry Wonser, those guys, as well as the drivers. And I've learned a lot from those guys, the way they go racing.
In some, especially in college sports, like in North Carolina, Dean Smith and Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, the players graduate, go on to professional careers, and they come back. And it's like a fraternity of guys that played for these. Does Ganassi have that same kind of pull to drivers when they leave? They still come back to him and call and say, hey, Chip, what about? Can you help me? What do I need to do?
I think he has, you know, there's no doubt he's had his battles with, I'm thinking Vassar, Zanardi, Montoya. They've all had you have that. But I spoke to Vassar this morning, give me a call. They all still are buddies.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, and we've done target events before and they've all come back and yeah, there's that draw. And I feel the fact that I'm still involved has a lot to do with Chip and the fact that he sees value in it because he's not going to pay me if he doesn't. But I feel really lucky that I get to hang out with that bunch of people that I like so much.
Years ago, he was a driver. Does that permeate what he is now? Does he still have that little corner of his mind to think like a driver?
I don't think so. I honestly don't. I've watched him. I told this story the other night. We were at Indy first year, 14, I think it was. And we there. I think they ran Tony out of fuel and Scott crashed or something. Wasn't a good day.
Oh.
And I'm sitting next to the big guy on the timing stand. And he goes, well, that wasn't very good, was it? Well, not his exact word. I think he's... No, he did. He didn't swear. He said that one. He doesn't swear much. That wasn't very good. I've had better days than that. He goes, oh, well, I'm off to Charlotte for the 600.
Oh, that's right.
Took his headset off and left. And I felt for him because he had no control over what was going on. He just put the pieces on the chessboard and he'd let everybody else do their stuff and it blew up.
Oh,
People equate him and the success to Roger Penske. Does he see the rivalry? Is there a competition between him and the captain?
I you got to ask him, but I think in order to win, you got to beat the captain. You got to beat Michael's guys. I'm a massive fan of Roger. I would go so far as to say I think we're friends. He's my local Ferrari and Porsche dealer too, so I spend a lot of money with him. He did actually sell me a car recently himself. It was quite funny.
Is he a good salesman?
Oh God, he's the best. But I always got a lot of satisfaction out of beating the Penske guys because I knew they were the best. And you got to, with Roger, you got to go through them and Tim Sindrick and all those guys. And Tim and I have had some crosswords in the past, but there's a lot of respect there in the drivers too. You know, Willie P and I, since I retired, we've become quite good buddies. And obviously he's a new dad and he's going through all that stuff. And I'm going to start sending him inappropriate gifts like motorbikes and stuff.
Because your sense of humor matches his. It's good.
Yeah, I was looking for a picture the other day of that last podium we did together in Sonoma when we were literally calling each other the C word on the podium.
Whoa.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Whoa. Yeah. Why?
Because he'd pushed me off on the last restart and I was not happy. And he thought I was in the wrong and he brought up something I'd done 2 years previous and I told him, oh, yeah. It was just funny. We were going to town. It was really...
So meanwhile, everybody's laughing with you guys and having fun and you guys are just saying these words in between your smiles.
No, I didn't smile.
Oh, you didn't?
Google the podium. He won the bloody race. I'm so pissed. And Justin Wilson was on it. Justin's just like, what are you two doing?
We're a little pissed.
How old is your daughter?
She's, what is he? She's 15 months old.
All right. Well, my daughter's 3 years old, and she's in Tampa right now, and she still has the ability to kick me in the nuts. It's incredible how little children find their dad's nuts. Is your daughter at that age yet?
She hasn't kicked me in the nuts yet.
Has she headbutted you in the nuts yet? Or just landed?
Not as, no, she jumped for me height and landed. Yeah,
good point.
Yeah. But this is what I love about social media. I know what's going on with you guys' life. And you know, your daughter, and you're like, oh, she's really cute. And I see you guys, you know, if Ellie posts a picture of Steve, that's her nickname, Sophia, it's like you'll post something. You know, Briscoe yesterday, I see Briscoe, I go, hey, I see the little one. I see she got out of going to school today. He looks, he goes, what? She pulled her first sickie. She's like, oh, mummy, I don't feel good. And I knew that. That's what I love about social media. You keep up with
you
your
see it all,
all
yeah.
over the world. And, yeah, it's cool. And then you see Dixon on holiday. Did you see that?
Yeah. Well, Emma is one. I mean, you've got a very hot wife, too. Emma in her bathing suit with her coconuts.
Yeah, nice coconuts.
Now, what I mean is she was holding coconuts. I'm not talking about her.
Yeah, she was. And it was.
But you know Emma in her bathing suits. Woo, she's fine.
No, I don't. I might need to go sculpt. Dario Franchitti, every time you roll in the Freak Nation, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully it won't stop. More stories from Dario Franchitti, your Grand Marshal for the Rolex 24. Man, as always, dude, thanks for doing
this. Thank you, guys. It's always fun. We always go off a tangent,
yes,
don't we?
Yes. Oh, yeah, and there's a race going on, by the way.